Just want to touch on all the fucking Facebook bullshit that's been going on, like with like the Messenger getting hacked and stuff. And I don't know where this stuff comes from, and I don't know who does it. And maybe it's just some like machine or some computer or something that just kind of randomly shoots this shit out for people. But I like to think of it as some fucking punk ass little bitch sitting in his fucking basement, in his mom's basement, just writing this crap and then sending it out and having a good laugh. But you know what? You're a fucking loser, and don't fuck with people's shit, man. Like, what's the fucking point of doing that? Recently, my messenger got fucking hacked. I got this message, and yeah, sure, you open it up, and the next thing you know, I'm sending out like 100 messages to people, sending that that hack or that virus around to the dude that I like to think is some fucking kid too smart for his own good. Stop fucking with people's shit. I hope you get hit by a fucking car.
You got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.
So that was my rant about the fucking Facebook hacker. I'm sure this has been going on for like ever, but what the fuck, man? I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to dwell on it. That's it. Welcome to episode 9 of Ego and Vice. I am your host. My name is Mike. Last Wednesday, Goat played with the Flydowns and Galapagos and Cool Kids Not You at the Flydowns EP release party. It was a good time. We opened the show, and it was a pretty good turnout, and everyone had a really fun time. I'd like to thank the House of Targ for housing that event, and I look forward to playing there again. I got a few things coming up with Goat that I'm just going to promote quickly, some shameless fucking Goat stuff. Let me see. This weekend, December 2nd at Lola's in Cornwall at 16 Pitt Street. Goat will be playing with the Armstrongs. It's like a cover band that does like Green Day and Rancid, I guess. Hence the Armstrongs. That's cool, man. We've been trying to play Lola's for a while. Talked to Scott a couple times over the last few months, and got a gig. So it's going to be fun. It'll be fun to play with our Cornwall friends, and looking forward to the Armstrongs. It's a 19 plus. There's no cover. Just come in, enjoy yourself, have some fun. The next one is December 16th. A really good show that's coming up is Goat's playing with the Riptides at the Riptides Merry Fucking Christmas album plus beer release. That's pretty cool. The doors are at 9. It's $10 at the door. It's 19 plus, and that's at the Dominion Tavern. Everyone knows the Dom down in the market, 33 York Street. We're playing with our friends, the Limburg Babies. That's going to be a really fun show. That is put on not just for a Christmas show, but it's also the Riptides are releasing a beer through Big Rig Brewing. The Big Rig beer will be released at that show. So how cool is that? Shit. What else is going on? Look at me flipping my papers like a fucking loser. Anyway, I have to write this shit down, else I won't remember it. So, bear with me. We also got my good buddy Chris Landry from Chris Landry and the Seasick Mamas puts on a Motorhead tribute show every year at the House of Targ. This year it's on January 27th. It's called Lemmy Revisited. House of Targ, as you know, is at 1077 Bank Street not in the market, for fuck's sakes. Anyway, but basically what it is they get a bunch of bands out to cover Motorhead songs and just celebrate the life of Lemmy Kilmister, because he was a legend who left us a few years ago now, a couple years now. And I believe this is the third annual Motorhead tribute show. And we've been honored to get the invite to play the show. So we go to scrambling hard to try and learn some Motorhead songs. Chris gave us a list of what's still available, and I think we picked some pretty good ones that are going to be a lot of fun to play. We're also playing with Thundercock, our friend Slumlord, cool man, a band called Motormouth, and a band called Xanadu. So yeah, that is the third annual, I believe, Lemmy Revisited Motorhead tribute show at the House of Targ. So lots going on, tons going on with Goat right now. And I know, you know, I'm just talking about Goat, but anyway. We also just got back from the studio. We went up to Skylark Park Studio with Jordan Zadorozny in Pembroke, and we recorded Ouija Shark, the song that we wrote for the upcoming movie under the same title, Ouija Shark. We got it done in a day. Turned out pretty good. I'm just getting the final mixes as they roll in now. And like I said, the director, Brett Kelly, this is the third movie in his Shark trilogy. And we're happy to be a part of it. And when I met Brett, I knew about Ouija Shark, or the movie he was making, because my friend Steph is the lead role in it. Fuck, she's going to kill the Ouija Shark, hopefully. But we don't know. No spoilers. And I asked Brett, do you need any music? I was thinking like an end credit scene. You know, when the movie ends, cut to black, start a song. And he said, yeah, go ahead and do it. So the song is a reality. It's actually done. It's in the can. Like I say, I'm just waiting for the final mix, and then I'm going to send it off to Brett, and I'm going to bid farewell to that motherfucker, and I won't ever think about it again until I sit down in the Mayfair Theater and watch the movie. And it should be pretty cool. The fuck was that? Okay, cool. So, like I said, this is episode 9 of Ego and Vice. And as always, I have a co-host in South Hood Studios this week. He is a producer, a sound guy, a booker, a just all-around renaissance man of the Ottawa music scene. And he has been for at least the last 15 years that I've known him. And he's also one of my best buddies on the planet. In South Hood, we have Eric Worley. How's it going, Eric?
Not too bad, man. How you doing?
Very good, very good. Super happy to have you out. Thanks for taking the time to come out and fucking sit with my sorry ass. I'm all sick. I can't breathe through my nose, but I'm, you know, like a trooper, I'm going to persevere through this podcast.
I'm definitely too far away from you then.
Oh, yeah. Don't, yeah.
Snuggle.
Try not to get too close to me, because I will make you sick. And as you know, Steph has a strep throat, which is a fucking contagious fucking disease. She sent us a picture of her with like a mask on, like the Asian people wear, like walking through the smog in China or whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You got to protect your lungs anyway.
And
so
this is her microphone as well, right?
Yeah, but
good.
Yeah, but that she hasn't talked in it for a good week, so she probably wasn't contagious then. So, Eric, known you for at least 15 years. I think our friendship or however started back in 2003 or whatnot. Who are you? Where you been? What's going on?
Wow.
Yeah, that's vague, right? That's just like, boom, take that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say 15 years with that for us. Who am I? I am still sorting that out.
Yeah, so much of us are.
Well, I guess as you said, I've just been in the music scene, I think, for about 12, 13 years now.
You're not from Ottawa, though.
No, born in Montreal.
Montreal,
okay. Yeah.
Cool. And then you lived in Montreal for?
I was really young. And then dad, military, came to Ottawa, went to Toronto, went back to Ottawa.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how did you end up here in this fucking one horse town?
You know what? This is the final house in terms of the military moving.
This was the end of the line?
Yeah, this was where my dad was just, okay, you guys stay here, and I'm going to go to these other places for the 6 months to a year that he might have to. And then we just stuck it out, and my mom made a niche for herself. And
Okay. Yeah. And growing up in Montreal and growing up in Ottawa, what are your like early ties to like music? Were you always interested in music? Was it one of those things you kind of noticed later? Because I remember when I first met you, I was you'd have all these cassette tapes from like the 90s, yeah. And I can relate to that because we're both old cocks. But I remember the Pantera, and you loved the metal and stuff like that. Where did that come from?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I've never really thought so much about this, but now that you mention it, it's just I used to sneak into my brother's room and listen to his records like in mid 80s, listening to Genesis and Phil Collins and just Rush,
which is amazing.
Yeah,
you can't go wrong with Genesis.
But I don't know how I ended up being there for this, but my parents did hit up some concerts back then. I guess so. But one of their favorite stories is I think I was about 4 months old and I was at a Neil Diamond concert in Indianapolis.
Excellent.
Yeah,
I have something to touch on after that, but please go on.
And for myself, my first two concerts, and oddly enough, for you know, an 8 or 10 year old to be at, would be the Irish Rovers at the NAC, which is just nothing but 2 hours of drinking songs. So
I was 8.
Yeah, and then the Beach Boys 25th anniversary tour in 85 I don't know what it would be called back then, but Lansdowne Park, I suppose, inside in the arena.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Civic Center back then.
You saw the Beach Boys?
Yeah.
That's fucking
Beach
awesome.
Beach Boys, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's like one of my... It could be one of those two is the first concert.
And you also saw Neil Diamond.
Yeah, but again, I was apparently a small baby just crying away for the whole show.
Okay.
But I guess that I would fit right in then with the his throngs of fans.
Sure, sure. So when I was growing up, I liked like bad music. I liked like not bad music, but I didn't like the music I like today. I just liked what I heard and whatnot. But I guess that's probably a good thing to like. But when you're touching on your brother, my sister was who I followed too, because she was like 3 years older than me, and she liked a lot of Canadian bands like Glass Tagger and Platinum Blonde and Corey Hart and Brian Adams. Yeah. So I just really gravitated towards that when I was in my single digits and stuff like that. So you really do look up to, you know, someone who's listening, and you kind of follow that. And I've heard that a lot too with like older siblings and stuff, where you kind of get into it from there. So,
well, you definitely pick out the stuff that you enjoy, and then you kind of don't even realize it because you kind of laugh at some of those artists at this point. But there still was that, like, I think about, say, listening to some early Gowan and listen to some Corey Hart, and then thinking about how like I went into metal and darker music from there. And it's like, considering what I had to be exposed to, it was kind of a darker side of music that I had already started to go down, even though those artists, I guess, generally aren't thought of as dark, so to speak.
No. So when you eventually stopped kind of like following what what other people listened to, and you started finding your own kind of music and whatnot, you're talking about like metal and that. Like,
yeah.
What was like the first memories of like where you said, hey, nobody likes this that I know, but I like this.
It was Friday nights with friends when I was a teenager, listening to CKCU.
Oh, nice.
And listening to The Metal Meltdown and The Peaceful Journey. So you had 2 hours of it just had the heavy metal, death metal, thrash, like real underground crazy stuff. And then you went right into underground hip hop.
And that got you?
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely kind of, you know, in terms of what you're exposed to with much music back then in the radio. And then suddenly it was like, wow, I've never heard some of this. And I remember listening to even Bad Motorfinger for the first time.
Soundgarden.
Yeah, and just being like, what is this? This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you, like, everyone has a story of when they first found out what they kind of like took through their, I guess, teenage. When once you become a teenager, you start carving out your own identity.
Yeah.
And yeah, I grew up in the grunge era, if I'm not dating myself, because before that I liked the like awful, like some of the hair metal. It was just like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then of course like Nirvana hits and then shit like that. And from like 91 to 97 I was wearing my like long underwear under my shorts, which I'm fucking doing right now. But yeah, that's really cool. And like I said, Pantera, I remember the Pantera cassette.
Yeah.
And you're kind of, when I first met you, I thought you were more of a, like a heavy metal guy, like a more of a grindy thrash metal or whatever.
Yeah, well, Entombed and Sepultura would be my two favorites for sure. And I've gotten to see Sepultura in concert, which was fantastic. And I think back then, even, you know, I had friends that introduced me to, say, Danzig back then, which wasn't as obviously hard and headbangy, but still really dark. And
yeah, that was some heavy stuff. I remember Danzig Lucifuge. It was like Danzig 2 with like Her Black Wings and stuff like that.
But you get into like Danzig 4 or 5 or whatever you got to, and it just starts like, it's like dark melodies.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's Danzig, and he's like, I think he might be Satan. Or trying to be. If Satan was 5'3".
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wide and tall.
Unfortunately, when I saw him perform, I think I was the only one in the arena that was actually there that cared that he was performing.
Oh, wow.
So it was a disappointing show. Yeah, he was clearly upset. Ozzy and Sepultura were still to come, which was...
Opening band. You suck.
Everyone was getting beer and popcorn and stuff, and I was like in the seat, and I was sitting really far away, and it's just like the lone guy.
Yeah, without obviously knowing where Danzig came from, and everyone knows the Misfits the Misfits went to Samhain to Danzig, and Danzig is still growing strong today. He's actually back with the Misfits now. He's doing like some reunion shows and whatever. So. That's cool.
That's the way it goes now, eh?
So, all right, Montreal into Ottawa. Brian Adams, Corey Hart, Brother Stuff, went into more of your own Soundgarden, Entombed, Sepultura. Where are you at now? Like, how did your, like, 20s and stuff go?
Yeah, well, it suddenly that flowed into house music as well. Okay. Just house music and... And then it was like a combination of, hip-hop, house music, and death metal that I was kind of listening to at the same time.
Because if there's one thing that I've kind of looked at you for over the years that we've known each other, it's you do have like a vast repertoire of music that you actually do listen to. Where I remember the tapes, and I remember the Neil Diamond picture on the thing. I didn't know you saw the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And now you do a lot of...
Just one of those things that just kind of when life, opens a door for you. And after one closed, I decided I was at a point where countless post high school education had not interested me.
Right.
And job I was at was I just needed out of it. Been there quite a while I tried to do school. And then I ended up down the road from my house at a local furniture store, and that's where I happened to meet Brian Ruxtel.
The Brian Ruxtel.
Yeah. Shoebox Recording.
All right. Did Jay work there too, Jay Watts?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Yeah. So me and Eric have a lot of mutual friends, and I remember this started somehow with that, because the way I met you, the way me and Eric met each other back in 2000-aught something was I was in a band with Brian Ruxtel. And Jay was in my band as well, and he met you. And the way we first, I think, got together, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that Brian, I don't want to touch too deep on this stuff, but Brian was working for a particular bar downtown, and that was a band that I was in called something, or I can say Our Mistake, and we were jamming there, and then some stuff happened, and he was... talking to you, and you said, well, we were looking for a jam spot, and you said, well, you can jam at my place.
I wasn't in a band, and I don't even know how that kind of came about, other than that I had the space, that one's it. Now, like, I can still distinctly remember Brian turning to me one day once we started to get into some New Cap Radio, Big Money Shot, and all this started to get started. And but I remember him just turning to me one day and being like, I think you'd be really good as a sound engineer. Do you want to learn it?
Right. And so,
So
we were jamming in your basement for a bit, and we started getting to know each other. And then, because Brian was working for New Cap as a sound guy.
Yeah.
And he said to you, like you just said, what do you think about that? And you said, yeah, let's do it. So tell us about that. Yeah. Like when you started learning, I guess.
Yeah, it was funny. I had decided that there was two things that I really would enjoy doing after everything else, the education and stuff that I didn't like, and I was like, well, I love golf and I love music, and I had no access to the music side of things, so I was starting to take my courses as a golfer, mm-hmm. so I could at least be teaching and have a pro status, etc.
And you're still fucking good, by the way.
Yeah,
son of a bitch.
But then suddenly the opportunity with the music came in, and Brian started to show me things at the Live Lounge back then when it first opened, and Live 88.5 just started, and then it was just trying to get my head around it all, mm-hmm. and the sheer panic of not being able to put on good shows for the band starting to roll through. And
well, you got to cut your teeth, right? You know, there's always a learning curve for everybody. And fuck, keep in mind, this is like 15 years ago. So
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know. No. So how did it go? Like, what did you do? Like, he brought you out. And how long did you, I hate to use this word, but was it like an apprenticeship or just like, because Brian had been doing sound for his whole life. You know?
I think we went to probably about 5 or 6 months, like right away, where, you know, he was doing everything. I was learning. And obviously he was letting me do more and more. And then it kind of came to a point where his interests were developing into him opening his studio. So it was like, Eric, you know, by about this time, you're on your own. And I was like,
sink or swim?
Yeah. Like, all right. And that's when I took the time myself and went and sat behind Slow Tom at Zaphod's for a couple months for free on like my Wednesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And he was cool about me just hanging out and seeing how he was working the board and starting to go down that path of learning and then finding out you just need to learn more.
Slow Tom being the legendary Ottawa musician from Furnace Face, mm-hmm. and now from Slow Tom and the Handsome Devils.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I remember running into Slow Tom again. I think it was at Zaphod's, whether it was with Goat or something, and I hadn't seen him in so many years, and he wears kind of like that green jumper and he's got the hair slicked back, and I just remember his sound check with the drummer. He's like, just give me an AC/DC beat. So yeah, after Slow Tom, I guess like eventually you just basically started to branch out and find your own gigs, and there was no more Brian's, there was no more Slow's. You were ready to go.
Yeah, well, you think you're ready, and then again you just keep on learning, and I've just been fortunate to have people around me where I could keep learning. But yeah, we hit that point, I think, within my first 8 months of knowing what an XLR was, mm-hmm. and we suddenly were mixing and recording Daniel Lanois at the Live Lounge.
Oh yeah.
that I distinctly remember that just being like okay, so I've barely got my foot wet in this, and I'm about to work with a renowned Canadian producer.
Yeah, amazing guy.
Yeah.
The Live Lounge, there's a radio station in Ottawa called Live 88.5. I'm sure most of the people all four people that listen to this podcast know what Live 88.5 is, but they used to have, a bunch of years ago, they actually opened a club, a bar called the Live Lounge. And Eric was the sound guy at the Live Lounge. Like, how did that come about? Like, when you talk about mixing Daniel Lanois, like, how did you get that permanent spot at the Live Lounge?
Just, again, through Brian. Through Brian, through the radio station. You know, obviously, things got off to a great start, and I don't know. This is where I toot my own horn and say that.
Of course,
please. Things were going well. I'd have artists, like, you know, acclaimed artists that had sat there and were like, you know, this sounds great and that sounds great. How long have you been doing this? And I didn't even want to tell them. I was like, okay, they're not even going to believe me. And it wasn't because anything, you know, I wasn't remaking or doing anything dynamic. I just doing a good job. And it was just fortunate that I have, you know, obviously people that you can respect and admire and have been there and done that, telling you that it sounds really good was...
Well, that's a huge pat in the back.
Yeah.
And it's also a great showcase of your work, right? Where, say, you haven't, like I said, this is like a long time ago where you just kind of started, but you got it. Like, some people just have a knack for things. Some people work their whole lives just to be mediocre. You're looking at one of them. But some people actually get really good at things, or they just, like, you know, you started in your 20s, I guess, where some people start young, but there was just something, it was like a missed calling, and then you found it and you've excelled at it. So,
well, but the best part about, say, the Live Lounge and into what I've done beyond that was I just had the unique opportunity of being able to work with some of the best Canadian sound engineers who were on tour with some of these major artists. So I get to have great chats with these guys, watch how they did things, watch their approach to mixing live sound, pick and choose what I took from it based on how I go about things. But it's really something to be said, rather than just, you know, starting out, say, at an open mic or a pub or your friend's band where you're running around and you're trying to make it sound good, when you're actually with people who are coming through with some of the top bands, and getting to watch them work and discuss things with them was so valuable.
And I think that's an amazing thing. Like if you have your head like rammed up your ass and you think you're so good at something, and these amazing guys that have been doing it and have so much information to give you, if you don't take it and listen and absorb it and try to use it towards like the advice, then you're crazy. Like, even nowadays, like at my stage, when I see bands come through, or like I will talk to people and just ask, like, hey, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you do that? Because you'll never run out of things to learn and get new ideas, right?
Yeah. It's just been an endless pool of learning. Like, you learn certain things and then you're like, okay, now I need to learn these things and then learn these things. Like, even now, 12, 13 years, I'm still. Blows my mind how much I feel like I still need to read up on, research, look at, and just to keep growing and keep up with things.
And I think that's an amazing attitude. And I you know, I'm not just me, blah, 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 but I take that into my life too. It's like, I'm not super egotistical to the point where I know everything. I don't know fucking anything. Yeah. Some days I wake up and I just want to quit. Like, I quit. But then you get some advice or you get some inspiration from people that you look up to, and it's so helpful into the things you want to do.
Or you just go out and see people doing it that aren't very good at it, and then you just feel better. You're like, oh,
right,
so, yeah,
fuck those people.
Exactly.
You suck.
Yeah,
I've definitely been
in some scenarios recently where I was like, wow, I feel so good about myself. And
yeah. You got a long way to go, loser. Anyway. All right. So that was a great start. We have a lot more to talk about with Eric Worley, but we're going to play a tune. Is that cool?
Yeah.
We're going to play a song from a local band, as we normally do here on. This is a song from a band called Bonnie Doon. This is a song called High Noon off their 2017 release, Dooner Nooner. I'll talk more about Bonnie Doon, when I come back from the song. All right, check it out.
You know.
All right, so that was Bonnie Doon. That was a song called High Noon off their 2017 release, Dooner Nooner. Let me just tell you a little bit about Bonnie Doon. The band members are Leslie Demon, Katie the drummer Duncan, Madison Mad Dog Watson, and Gina Vanelli. And they have a show on December 2nd at the Rainbow Bistro, the Big Room, downtown in the market. And they're playing with Nightshades. It's an Ottawa grunge, garage grunge band. They're playing with a band called the Slow Dawn. It's an Ottawa psych band. And they're also playing with a band called Smokes from Montreal. So you should go check that shit out because the Rainbow's rad. And so are Bonnie Doon. Thank you so much for letting us play that song, guys. I'm sitting here with Eric Worley. This is Ego and Vice. I think where we left off was... shit, I don't even fucking remember.
Something about our egos, I think.
Yeah,
stroking something.
As much as you guys think this is like one continuous thought, we like took a good 15-minute break, drank a bunch of beers, and talked about a whole bunch of other shit, so I have no idea where the fuck we left off.
I am a blank now. Clean slate.
Yeah. Let's talk about how... okay, so we've known each other since that inception as far as jamming in your basement. And let me say that I've been jamming in Eric's basement for about 15 years. That's fucking nuts. You even moved once.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I jammed in your other basement.
We've gone from the main basement to a new basement and
then back to the main
basement.
That's too funny.
The second time through though, you got to make it your own.
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
these were your projects the second time through versus the first time through was a collaborative.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so now you've gotten all the whiteboards are all your junk now.
Right, all my fucking all sloppiness.
Personal, yeah.
But Eric, like when we met, me and Eric became fast friends somehow, and he was a groomsman at my wedding. He was also a drinking buddy at my divorce ceremony, which was fucking awesome. And we've been kind of through thick and thin. We used to work at Hope together. Hope Volleyball Beach Fest.
Yes. Yes. Is this the segue into the ultimate story or the
sure,
the near death experience?
Oh my god, the golf cart Yeah, who wants to tell that one?
Oh. Man, I don't even know where to start with that one.
Okay.
It was a dark and stormy.
So the beauty of Hope is our friend Laura Andrews, who is actually lives above me. She is like the GM of Hope, or she's like the own, like the boss of Hope.
I confuse this all the time, but
yeah,
yes.
Me too. Yeah,
the boss.
Her and Holly Terrison. Yeah, they're friends of ours. They basically run and put on and organize the Hope Volleyball Beach Fest every year. And for the first, no, I wouldn't say the first. I think we went in there in the middle somewhere. Me and Eric, we used to work backstage behind like the stage, and we used to cut the cheese for, no, well, hey, we used to, no, literally like cut cheese for the bigger bands, and we'd pick them up at the airport and all that bullshit and bring them to the stage. And
bring their booze and sandwiches and veggie platters.
And we had a golf cart that we used to drive around in. And... I was no stranger to getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning, going to the beach and getting there for 8:15 and immediately digging into the beers. And
it's at the stroke of 11.
Yeah. And we would drive this golf cart around and just like, you know, do our responsibilities. Like we'd work, we'd do our thing. But one time, you know, I think it was like a rainy day or the grass was wet.
Oh, it was storming. It was a stormy day. We were in like ponchos and stuff.
Ponchos. Was that the rainy, where they almost shut the shit down?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Fuck. And we were driving around the golf cart, and if you've ever been to Mooney's Bay in Ottawa, there's this big hill right in the fucking middle. It's like Mooney's Bay Hill.
It's a solid hill.
And the way to get around the compound fences, you have to drive through the parking lot and go around the fences, or you could like cut through because we had like passes, so you could get up to the top of the hill where some of the Hope people would sit and watch the show, because the actual trailer where the stage was set up, you could look down and kind of survey everything and see things. And me and Eric being fucking complete idiots, we're up there. I shouldn't even say you. I'm just throwing you under the bus. We were up at the top of the hill, and we started going down the hill.
It was a nice view, so we'd get away from everyone, and we'd go hide up there for a minute.
Or we'd go back in the bush.
Because we could get back to anywhere we needed to be really fast in that cart.
Or we'd drive back into the bush and park the golf cart behind the bushes and drink Coors Light.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, we're good, and then drive back up. But we got to the top of this hill one night, or this one hope. And we started driving down really gingerly, too. It was just like...
I was gentle. I was gently driving because it was wet. The grass was so wet. It was so slick. And Mike here, I'm taking over the story here for a second. This is my life flashing before my eyes. So Mike decides, he's like, the best way to get down a hill in this kind of slickness in a golf cart is to just floor it. And before I know what's happening, he sticks his leg over and just hammers the gas.
I think I put my foot on your foot.
Yeah, you just. I'm just me. No.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So yeah, I don't know what that slope would be, but obviously a very steep hill. It's raining. The grass is slick.
She was a good 45.
And I guess you finally agreed that we shouldn't be going that fast, and you hammered the brakes down.
And we did. We started doing spinning.
There was that moment where we were suddenly sideways to the hill, and I remember there was when things are going crazy and. I mean, there's a possibility of danger and you don't know what's going to happen and you have that slowdown moment. I remembered looking sideways down this hill and I could hear a girl screaming off in the distance because she was watching this horrible accident that was about to happen. And I remember the police officers heard the girl screaming and they were looking over at us. And we were literally 180 degrees sideways. This thing was, I was sure it was about to just catch and just fly into the air. And then somehow it did one more 180 and we came to a stop.
We came out unscathed. Wheels fucking north. Jeez. And I remember we came to a stop at the end and you just looked at me. Just this stern kind of like.
Yeah.
And then you just drove off and we went off to our duties.
Yeah, well, you're thinking about also like the Jackass movie when they bail in the cart and then you think about how hard you can actually bail in a golf cart.
Oh my god, you've seen them flip. There's nothing to keep you in that thing.
And I've never gone that fast in a golf cart either, let alone be sideways with the wheels still just sliding on the grass.
Never. But we lived.
We lived
to tail the tale.
Yes, we became closer, stronger.
That's right. That's cool.
We definitely went and got more beer after that.
Oh, yeah. We needed to decompress a little bit.
What have you guys been doing with the golf cart? Yeah, nothing.
No, it seemed like a good idea at the time, right?
Checking out the beach.
Hope was a good few years. I think we did that for a few years straight.
5 to 7, I want to say. Somewhere like in that. There. Yeah. We kind of... Are you doing it? We want to help. And then the day of would come and we'd both be there and we'd be like, wicked. And then let's have a good time and charity and raise money and volleyball.
For sure, man. It is a great event. Yeah. And you, every Hope Volleyball Beach Fest goes on every year. Support it. It's for an amazing bunch of causes.
Yep.
And you may see a golf cart spinning and spinning and spinning down Mooney's Bay Hill.
They have better golf carts now, I think. Like, they look sturdier and a little bit more.
Because
we had one of those classic, little white, didn't have governors and, like.
Yeah, it was just like if you're just out to shoot, nine holes, you're just doing the front nine. Now they have those, those crazy all-terrain vehicles where there's four-seaters and they have the all-terrain tires and shit. Maybe we put that in motion. I'm not sure. Whatever. We survived.
We lived.
We lived to tell. Anyway. Hope is still around, but we don't do it so much anymore. But we started, you were working at the Live Lounge doing the, you were like the sound guy at the Live Lounge.
Yeah, at that point. And then started into the booking, and we were doing Hope Beach Volleyball. And
There was a thing that I can relate to between the two of us. I wasn't there a ton of the time when you were at the Live Lounge, but there was something called the Electric Frying Pan.
Absolutely. who can forget?
I can't. That was the every Wednesday at the Live Lounge, hosted at the Live Lounge by Live 885. There was an open mic, and that was my first dabble into it. I think Brian, speaking of Brian, was the first host, and he was there sometimes. And then I think Eric Eggle hosted once in a while. And then there was a time when it came, I got called into like co-host or something like that, like a couple times. And then everyone else fell through because they were doing stuff. And then you came to me, I remember, and you were like, you want to host this thing? And I'm like, yes, I do.
Was that the start into your foray of open mics? And
that was the first
involved?
Thing I ever did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I've done a couple since then, but that was the first one. And then I just went up and just made an ass of myself, you know. I went up, hey, I pretended I was like a game show host.
Oh yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was cool. And I hosted the Live Lounge with you.
Yeah.
You were DJ.
Oh, the smoke and E.
And I was old Mike.
Yeah.
And we did that for almost a year and a half.
Yeah, and I was doing the Pro Tools recordings and video recordings, and you were hosting and jamming and.
That was a good time. I look back on that. That was a fucking great time.
We had the full band setup with the two Marshalls and the Pearl Export drum kit.
Right. You go to some open mics in Ottawa and you just basically borrow the host's guitar and you do your Bob Dylan covers. But this was like you wanted to go there with your full band and you could just play like a rock show almost, like three, four songs, depending how busy the night was. Yeah. Electric Frying Pan. And I had the shit list. Get on the shit list.
Yeah.
And... Terry was the bartender. That was a good time.
Yeah. Jared was managing then, I believe.
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jared, yeah. What's
Jared
going on with
Humphreys,
that guy?
Real estate.
No
I believe.
Shit.
Yeah, he's
good for him.
Real estate now. Yeah.
He's still alive, eh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's comforting to know that, cuz
2017's been tough, I know, but Jared's still here.
The few nights I went through with you and that guy, I'm surprised that we're all still alive.
The Crown Royal days.
Right.
Yikes.
So after the Live Lounge, because the Live Lounge, I think it closed maybe in 2000?
10, 11. Okay. 10, 11, yeah.
And that was kind of like your gig for quite a while, like working with NewCap, working with Live. And
yeah, it was the full-time thing. I was not only with the Live Lounge, running and the constant booking for the Friday night indie sessions and then working, remixing and recording on-air specials for Live 88.5, you know, during the Blues Fest, you know, when I'd have, you know, 8 to 10 artists in the Live Lounge doing just stuff for, you know, 20-30 minute specials.
Sure.
And then, you know, into a bigger concert series and Capitol Music Hall and just everything tied in with NewCap Radio. It was really crazy.
So obviously you were building like an amazing resume, building a great name for yourself. And once the Live Lounge decided to, I used to love the Saturday Night Hard Drive with DJ Noah as well.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
I still have some videos of just people enjoying their Saturday nights.
You guys would hire me you'd pay me like $100 to come out on a Saturday night and do the lights. And I would just sit there and just do hard strobe. That's all I did was the strobe lights. But anyway. After the Live Lounge closed down, what was your next venture like?
I think within a few weeks, I had a friend Justin, who's also a sound engineer in Ottawa, who was working at Ritual Nightclub at the time, and his interests were turning into furthering his education, and didn't have the time to do all the gigs that they had there, and he just called me up and was like, Eric, I think you'd really like this gig here at Ritual.
Ritual.
I'll let you talk to the owner. I've already put in the good word for you. It's yours if you want it.
And you worked there for a long time.
4 or 5 years we were there. Yep. Yeah. And I essentially went from the Live Lounge, which ultimately was no longer the Live Lounge, not so much because of Live 88.5, but actually the ownership of the building, which was then at that point being transformed into things that aren't toward, you know, oriented towards music or live venues.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought a whole bunch of that NewCap Radio Live 88.5 stuff with me to Ritual and gave the radio station just a new spot to do a lot of the things that they wanted to keep doing, but obviously without having their own bar anymore.
Cool. Yeah, I remember Ritual was like a cool spot, and I knew if I had nothing to do, I could always go out and hang out with you at the live or fucking at Ritual. And I did once in a while. I think I did. I don't know. Can't remember.
Yeah.
It's all a goddamn blur.
Then you were there.
And then I was there.
That means you were there. Yeah. If it's a blur.
I remember I went to Ritual one night and I had nothing really on the go, and I just needed to go out and do something, and I started drinking at home. Then I went to Ritual for a while and I had more drinks, and then I ended up walking, because Ritual is in the market. It's kind of like behind Rideau Street or off Rideau Street. I ended up walking up to Mavericks, which is a bar right on Rideau, kind of behind Ritual a bit.
Block down.
Hung out with Eric, drank some beers. Then I accidentally went to Mavericks and joined Hearts and Minds. Well, during that whole era.
You didn't get on stage and perform it.
No. Okay. They were just playing. I'm like, you know what? We were drinking, and I was just like, or you were working. You probably weren't drinking. I was drinking.
Well, no, I was probably...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Depends on what hour of the night.
I don't know if we should get into that stuff. Yeah.
Well, no. I was always very good. I never had one until the headliner was.
Fair enough.
It wasn't an endless evening, but
so I showed up at Ritual, I had a few beers, and I said, I'm just going to walk over to Mavericks because I know Jay's playing, or Matt and Jay are playing in Hearts and Minds. Walked into that bar, just wrecked from the Ritual, and went up to Matt after they were done playing, and I was like, "Hey man, we should totally jam." And he's like, okay. And that was like 4.5 years ago. No, I just accidentally fell into a band.
Yeah.
So thanks, Eric.
You're
All right. So that is the end of part one with Eric Worley. We talked for like, oh God, must have been about 2 hours. And I decided to break it up into a two-parter just because 2 hours is a long podcast. This way you can listen to part one and, you know, get your fill of that, and then listen to part two with fresh ears to see what the next part's about, the conclusion, I suppose. It was really cool for Eric to come in. We had a great interview, and part two is just as fabulous, just as rad as part one, as I know you think it was. I'm just kidding. It might be awful, but hey, what are you gonna do? You can always reach me at egoinvice@gmail.com. You can check out my website, egoinvice.com, or you can just go to Facebook and say hello. If you want to be on the show, if you want me to showcase your band, I'm always open to do that. Or if you just want to say hello or leave me a question or tell me to go fuck myself, always open for that as well. So anyway, so part two of Eric Worley should be up next week. Maybe it'll be up sooner. Maybe I'll surprise you guys. You never know. All right, so that's it. This has been Ego and Vice, episode 9. See you later.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.